Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, April 4th, 2016. And as usual, we'd like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Zimbabwe tightens crackdown on citizens allegedly insulting President Robert Mugabe on social media.
There's no basis at law to criminally sanction the forwarding of messages on WhatsApp. It can never be called criminal nuisance.
A junior doctors' strike continues despite claims that they have reached an agreement with government over revised contracts.
So far, as we speak to the doctors who are on the ground, they are saying that there is no such an agreement, and they are surprised to hear the Deputy Minister making such pronouncements because it is untrue. They have never agreed with the government.
Drought-stricken villagers sell treasured properties as families struggle to find food.
You see the verve of this country now. If you have got something to sell, you can even sell even your property today. You can sell your property for you to survive.
And ministers' fight over Zimbabwe's Black Economic Empowerment Program exposes alleged deep-rooted ZANU-PF factionalism.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Government is now widening its crackdown on social media platforms such as Facebook and messaging application WhatsApp, arresting people for insulting President Robert Mugabe. The latest accused is a 46-year-old Nyanga man, Ernest Matsapa, facing charges of allegedly violating some sections of the Criminal Law Codification and Reform Act. Matsapa is alleged to have unlawfully and intentionally sent audio and visual messages on a WhatsApp group called Nyanga Free Range, of which he is a member. The audio and visual clip, according to state-controlled newspapers, has the impression that President Mugabe is incapacitated and has become a national burden.
The state alleges that this is denigrating Mr. Mugabe and that such material is likely to interfere with ordinary comfort, convenience, peace or quiet of the public or any section of the public. Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says it has represented over 150 people charged with insulting Mr. Mugabe since 2010, though many cases were dropped. Lawyers have challenged the constitutionality of this law. But Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is also Justice Minister, has defended the law as necessary to prevent, quote, the breach of public order and safety, close quote. The Constitutional Court is yet to make a ruling. Lawyer Peggy Tavagadza tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that Matsapa will appear in court at the end of this month for allegedly insulting Mr. Mugabe, a charge he is denying.
Ernest Matsapa was arrested on the 13th day of January 2016 and was released, and he has now been summoned to court to appear for trial on the 29th of April 2016. The charge being, he has been charged with criminal nuisance, it being alleged that he sent a visual and audio message on WhatsApp, social media network, on a platform group called Nyanga Free Range, of which he is a member. So it is alleged that the audio and visual clip is the impression that the President of the Republic of Zimbabwe is incapacitated and he has become a further burden of the majority of his, including his family, due to his diminishing responsibility.
And who is the complainant?
The complainant is the state.
But who exactly reported the matter, do you know?
I am not so sure who reported the matter, but I think it is the group admin. From the state papers, it appears as if the group administrator reported the matter, but it's not very clear as to who actually reported. But what is very clear is that one of the recipients of the forwarded message is the one who then made a complaint to the police out of fear. Because what Ernest Matsapa, my client, simply did was to forward.
Does he have a leg to stand on? How strong is his defense?
Yes. those who indeed win this case, there is no basis at law to criminally sanction the forwarding of messages on WhatsApp. It can never be called criminal nuisance in the proper legal sense. Just a person sending a message on his phone. There's no criminal sanction. He has no criminal liability. He never had the intention to defame or to defame the president as if his only crime was just to forward a message which he received, which he never authored.
That was lawyer Peggy Pavagadza of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Mutare.
Hello there. To mark Zimbabwe's 36th independence anniversary, Studio 7 will be giving out solar-powered radios or T-shirts for our lucky winners. Simply invite 10 friends to join our VOA Studio 7 Facebook page. Ask them to like our page. Keep their names so we can verify your claim. We will also be running a daily competition for lucky winners. You only need to answer a simple question about Zimbabwe's independence. The draw will be conducted April 18th, Independence Day. Don't be left out.
Junior doctors have refuted claims that they have reached an agreement with the Minister of Health over revised contracts. A statement attributed to Deputy Health Minister Adrian Musiiwa over the weekend said the two sides have resolved their differences and the doctors are expected to go back to work. But Dr. Martin Mlilo, one of the striking workers, doctors says they said a Friday meeting with state representatives did not produce any instant results because the doctors' representatives only met with medical directors who were representing the Health Services Board. The junior doctors were supposed to sign the adjusted contracts on the 1st of March but refused to do so, claiming that the employment contracts violated their human rights. The strike by the junior doctors has resulted in the closure of the country's two main referral hospitals, Harare Central and Mpilo Central Hospital's outpatient departments. There was no comment from the Minister of Health about the latest developments. Dr. Mlilo tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that they will only go back to work when their grievances are addressed.
So far, as we speak to the doctors who are on the ground, they are saying that there is no such an agreement, and they are surprised to hear the Deputy Minister making such pronouncements because it is untrue. They have never agreed with the government to go back to work.
Your representatives met with clinical directors on Friday. May you tell us what was discussed?
The discussion was meant actually basically to give feedback. The clinical directors were giving feedback to the doctors from the HSP, which is the employer of the doctors. And among the discussions that they made was that the doctors are requesting or asking the ministry to avail open practicing certificates after 24 months, which is the expiry of the proposed contract, because the doctors are saying they are going to find themselves redundant without those open practicing certificates because they can't do anything. They can't work in the private. They can't open even their own surgeries. I was told that this is, I think, one of the sticky issues in terms of the negotiations and discussions so far.
Do you have any idea of how the situation is in the hospitals as of today?
The people who are on the ground have confirmed that there isn't much of a difference because the situation remains the same in terms of the number of doctors who are on the ground. The patients are still finding themselves having to wait for a long time in the queues to be served by the few doctors who are serving because of the critical shortage of manpower.
That was Dr. Martin Mlilo on the line with Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
Hello, Zimbabwe. This month we are commemorating Zimbabwe's 36th independence anniversary. The 18th of April, 1980. A significant moment celebrated by millions of people, including the late great Bob Nesta Mali on Independence Day in Harare. What are your memories of that moment? And what about 36 years later? Share your thoughts with us by sending us a voice recording on our WhatsApp number 001-202-465-0318. We are also on Facebook and Twitter.
Most villagers in Mashonaland West Province are now surviving on piece jobs and selling treasured property, while their elderly are complaining that young people are grabbing all the drought relief aid in the region hit by devastating drought. Our correspondent Antha Chigoriwa reports from Chinoy.
Some villagers in the Mangura, Doma, Kesi, and the Umbowe communal lands say life is unbearable and serious food shortages are forcing them to sell property, including land, scotch cats, cattle and goats, in order to buy food for their families. One of the villagers, George Piri of Mangura, says the situation is critical in the mining region where villagers are struggling to get food.
You see the survival of this country now. It's like somebody, if you've got something to sell, you can even sell even your property today. You can sell your property for you to survive.
Another villager, Brian Soto, who is one of the lucky youth that got a piece of land when Zimbabwe embarked on its agrarian reforms in 2000, says it is disheartening that he is surviving on temporary jobs, yet he has a piece of farm currently lying idle. He says it is difficult to till the land due to the devastating drought, a situation that has forced him to depend on other villagers for food and basic necessities if he is not doing some temporary work.
We lend money to one another, but it's difficult to pay back. People are surviving on piece jobs.
75-year-old Sekura and Fari Mujgiwa of Urungwe communal lands says his family is now depending on the scarce state food handouts as most fields were reduced to dust piles by the dry spell. Indications are that some ZANU PF activists are grabbing food aid from elderly people who can now hardly have a decent meal per day. One of the affected elderly people is Frail Sekuru Mujgiwa, who claims that his free food ration was recently snatched by suspected ZANU PF activists under the watchful eye of relief aid agencies.
I see. Chinozo konzeresa ndeche vana vadiki vanonga varipo.
What really pains us is that there are young people who grab foodstuffs from us. This is causing a lot of problems among the people. At times there are fist fights. However, the government is trying to assist where it can.
Elderly Banjin Banda, who migrated from Malawi in the 1960s and worked the whole of his life in the mines, is in the same predicament.
The youth are causing a lot of problems as they use their energy to take away food from us. Some old people like me end up suffering. I end up surviving like a chicken which looks for food everywhere.
Most people that are supposed to be engaged in farming are finding it hard to cultivate crops under such difficult conditions due to lack of water. Munashe Mukototsi, who depends on farming for survival, says he has not been able to grow crops in the last 2 years because of drought. He says he is now doing piece jobs in order to generate money for his household.
There
are no rains, and this resulted in some of us failing to grow crops. As it is right now, I don't know where we will get our next meal. Now we depend on piece jobs like weeding crops for other people. I don't think that I'll get anything in my own field because of lack of rains.
Piri says the future looks bleak for most villagers.
In the next 12 months, people, they are hanged. They don't know their future. That's what I told you, that they don't know where they are going. They know where they came from, but they don't know where they are going.
Some villagers now believe that the only way for them to get out of this misery is to change the current ZANU-PF government. Mukototsi supports this idea, though he believes that this is an uphill task.
The only way to live a normal life is to change things, to change the government of ZANU-PF, although it is difficult, considering the police and the army.
Zimbabwe says at least 4 million people need drought relief aid as a result of the devastating drought already declared as a state of disaster by President Robert Mugabe. Reporting for Studio 7 in Chinoy, this is Arthur Chigoriwa.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
a closer look at the use of medication to curb HIV after exposure to the virus.
And it was a weekend of mixed fortunes for soccer clubs in Zimbabwe. Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Governments around the world are vowing to chase down the wealthy, powerful and famous who set up offshore bank accounts to hide their assets and possibly evade taxes. The immediate reaction to a massive investigative journalist's report. But the Kremlin denounced the disclosures, saying they were most likely aimed at Russian President Vladimir Putin and claiming former U.S. State Department and Central Intelligence Agency officials helped analyze the 11.5 million documents leaked from Panama's Mossack Fonseca law firm. The report said Putin's associates have funneled nearly $2 billion through offshore accounts over the years.
Republicans intent on blocking billionaire businessman Donald Trump as their party's next presidential nominee face a key test tomorrow in the Wisconsin primary. VOA's national correspondent Jim Malone analyzes the impact of Trump's possible defeat in Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin, Republican Ted Cruz is leading in the polls there over frontrunner Donald Trump. And a victory for Cruz over Trump could be a significant setback for the Trump campaign, as they hope to win the number of delegates in advance to secure the party nomination at the Cleveland Convention in July. So, if Cruz is able to defeat Trump in Wisconsin, it would make it more likely that we would have what we call a contested party convention in July, in which case all bets are off as to who might be the eventual nominee. Trump would likely go into the convention leading in the number of delegates, but if it goes beyond the first ballot, it would make it more likely that someone other than Trump could become the Republican nominee. So looking ahead to Tuesday's vote in Wisconsin, there's a lot on the line as to where the U.S. presidential race will go next. We'll have more on this once we get the results from Wisconsin, so thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much, Jim.
The Republic of Congo says gunmen attacked police, military and government targets in the capital today. In the first major violence since the re-election of President Denis Sassou Nguesso.
An app made by the Taliban appeared briefly in the Google Play Store. The site Intel Group, which monitors terrorism online, said it found the Android app on Friday.
A series of suicide bombings Monday killed at least 24 people and wounded 60 others across Iraq. Several of the blasts targeted Iraq troops and paramilitary fighters.
And South Africa's parliament will open debate tomorrow on an opposition motion to impeach President Jacob Zuma for violating the constitution.
The National AIDS Council says although it supports the use of post-exposure prophylaxis in the prevention of HIV infection after exposure to the virus, it encourages the use of condoms and protected sex as a way of fighting against HIV/AIDS. Post-exposure prophylaxis, or PEP, involves taking anti-HIV medication as soon as possible after one is exposed to the virus in order to reduce the chance of becoming HIV positive. National AIDS Council spokesperson Tadiwa Pfupa says in the event of sexual abuse such as rape, it is advisable to contact the nearest health center immediately so that one can be put on post-exposure prophylaxis to avoid contracting the virus.
If someone gets raped and the rapist commits the crime unprotected, then they can go to the nearest hospital, actually get the police report and get post-exposure prophylaxis. That is the name of the treatment or what they should get in the event of having been exposed to HIV. Or if someone gets sick, anything that they think may cause HIV, they should take post-exposure prophylaxis. Also, in the event that someone engages in irresponsible sex, that is unprotected sex, and then they realize later on they didn't know the status of their partner or they just feel they are at risk, then they also can approach their doctors for post-exposure prophylaxis.
How soon should somebody take this medication after exposure to HIV?
Post-exposure prophylaxis is taken within 72 hours of the exposure. So it can be 72 hours from the moment that one engaged in sexual activity or 72 hours from the moment that one presumed or yourself. Any kind of exposure should get the prophylaxis within 72 hours. Our advice is someone then should get help as soon as they possibly can, rather than to relax in the comfort that we are still within 72 hours or we are at 56 hours and so on. Earlier the best.
And in what form does this come in?
It comes in the form of antiretroviral medication, that is post-exposure prophylaxis. The combination will determine for how long the person will have to be taking the medicine or the antiretroviral tablet. However, as the National AIDS Council, we continue to encourage people to use condoms rather than to depend on post-exposure prophylaxis because it comes with a cost. These are tablets that could be given to people who get infected by some other means that may not really be delivering. So we encourage people the best method to avoid HIV transmission should be condom use rather than to depend on post-exposure prophylaxis. Post-exposure prophylaxis is indeed proven to help in the hindrance or stopping the transmission of HIV should one get exposed to HIV or think they are exposed to HIV. It is an effective method, but we still encourage condom use and anything else.
And is the medication readily available?
In the event that someone gets raped and they have a police report, they can approach any public health institution, local clinics, central clinics, mission hospitals, government hospitals, and so on. They can get the post-exposure prophylaxis within the 72 hours that I have just talked about. In the event that someone engages in unprotected sex and it has not been a police case, those people can approach their doctor, their private doctor also, and they get a prescription to buy the antiretroviral medication that will get the post-exposure prophylaxis.
That was Tadiwa Pfupa, the spokesperson for the National AIDS Council, speaking to us from Harare.
The public spat between Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa and Indigenization Minister Patrick Joao over compliance by foreign banks with indigenization regulations is an indication of the dysfunction that has come to characterize the ZANU-PF government. That assessment from analysts who continued to weigh in on Saturday's clash of the Patricks after Chinamasa advertised in the press that foreign banks operating in Zimbabwe, including Barclays, Stanbic, Old Mutual, KEBS, Standard Chartered Bank, Ecobank, Bank ABC, and MBCA have complied with the indigenization law that requires foreign firms to transfer a 51% stake to locals. This angered Joao, who responded with a lengthy statement saying Chinamasa was out of order, adding none of the said institutions had complied with the law. For perspective, reporter Ntungamilinkomo reached economic analyst Masimba Kuchera.
The truth is that Minister Chinamasa, according to the regulations that the banks should follow and the primary statutes such as the Banking Act, Minister Chinamasa and Governor Mangujka are correct. You will remember that Minister Tendai Biti and Governor Gideon Gono also had the same problem with Sevier Kasukuere, and now Patrick Shiwao thinks that the indigenization law is a more superior law than those laws that govern the finance sector. But what you should understand is that that is a very sensitive sector which should be treated with some level of caution, because they are the ones who are the custodians of people's savings. And if you don't treat them with sufficient caution, you might find people making a run on banks, because people will not have any faith in the banking system. So it's important for Minister Joao probably to realize that fact.
Maybe Mr. Joao is correct too, because there is no law that says banks are exempt from the indigenization law.
Yes, he is correct in that the indigenization law should apply to everyone. But then the loophole in the Indigenization Act says that line ministries are the ones who should implement as how they see it in terms of those within their ambit. So this is why Minister Joao cannot probably force banks literally to... He expects the Minister of Finance to do that on his behalf. But as I'm saying, the Minister of Finance has seen that... It may not be a very strategic thing to do.
That was economic analyst Masimba Kuchera on the line with Studio 7's Ntungameli Nkomo from Harare.
Young people out there, are you concerned about the many issues that affect you and Zimbabweans in general? Rise to the occasion. Make an impact. Let your voice be heard, and let's get talking on The Connection.
We cover a range of issues that affect young people, including unemployment, health, education, politics, and much, much more.
I am Tatenda Gumbo.
And I'm Ntungameli Nkomo.
And we are the hosts for your number one youth forum, The Connection. Join us tomorrow as we discuss the National Youth Fund and calls by Youth and Indigenization Minister Patrick Joao for youth that benefited to repay their loans.
To get involved, send us a message with the hashtag TheConnection on WhatsApp. The number is 001-202-465-0318.
In sports news, it was a weekend of celebration for some and mourning for others as the Castle Laga Premier Soccer League race roared into life. Reporter Michael Cariati tells us what happened.
It is celebration time for almost half of the Castle Laga Premier Soccer League clubs after they recorded impressive victories when the 2016 Castle Laga Premier Soccer League race took off the ground. So impressive, with defending champion Chicken Inn, who scored 3 goals past 1998 Cup Champions League finalist Dynamos, with their goals coming from a double strike by Obadiah Tarumwa and another from Tafadzwa Coutinho. This was a bold statement of Chicken Inn's intentions to retain their title. Coach Joey Antipas praised his boys for their sterling performance.
Dynamos is still in the new coach, new philosophy, rebuilding stage, so... I reckon they'll pick up as the season goes on, but I got to give credit to my boys.
Even new Dynamos coach Paulo George Silva admitted that his club was no match for the Gamecocks, but said his team will wake up from this slumber.
Play with Chicken Inn is a good team with 10 players is difficult, and Chicken Inn make the game and he deserved to win in the second half.
This was Dynamos' first defeat in their first game of the season since 2011, when Dimbare, then coached by Lloyd Mtasa, lost 1-0 to the now defunct Kiglon. However, the Gamecocks are not alone among the leaders, as Islanders, who have been very impressive during the offseason, continued with their fine form with a convincing 3-0 win away to Wange at the Colliery. Islanders are also through to the final of the Zimbabwe National Army Charity Shield.
That's all we had for you tonight. Please do stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntunga Milinkomo. This is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.